1.
I was there,
he would say afterwards, until afterwards became a time quite devoid of laughter.
I was there, the day Horus slew the Emperor.
It was a delicious conceit, and his comrades would chuckle at the sheer treason of it. The story was a good one. Torgarden would usually be the one to cajole him into telling it, for Torgarden was the joker, a man of mighty laughter and idiot tricks. And Loken would tell it again, a tale rehearsed through so many retellings, it almost told itself. Loken was always careful to make sure his audience properly understood the irony in his story. It was likely that he felt some shame about his complicity in the matter itself, for it was a case of blood spilled from misunderstanding. There was a great tragedy implicit in the tale of the Emperor's murder, a tragedy that Loken always wanted his listeners to appreciate. But the death of Sejanus was usually all that fixed their attentions. That and the punchline. It had been, as far as the warp-dilated horologs could attest, the 203rd year of the Great Crusade. Loken always set his story in its proper time and place. The commander had been War Master for about a year, since the triumphant conclusion of the Ulanor campaign, and he was anxious to prove his newfound status, particularly in the eyes of his brothers. War Master. Such a title. The fit was still new and unnatural, not yet worn in. It was a strange time to be abroad amongst stars. They had been doing what they had been doing for 2 centuries, but now it felt unfamiliar. It was a start of things. And an ending, too. The ships of the 63rd Expedition came upon the Imperium by chance. A sudden etheric storm, later declared providential by Malagurst, forced a route alteration, and they translated into the edges of a system comprising 9 worlds. 9 worlds, circling a yellow sun. Detecting the shoal of rugged expedition warships on station at the out-system edges, the Emperor first demanded to know their occupation and agenda. Then he painstakingly corrected what he saw as the multifarious errors in their response. Then he demanded fealty. He was, he explained, the Emperor of mankind. He had stoically shepherded his people through the miserable epoch of warp storms, through the age of strife, staunchly maintaining the rule and law of man. This had been expected of him, he declared. He had kept the flame of human culture alight through the aching isolation of old night. He had sustained this precious, vital fragment, and kept it intact, until such time as the scattered diaspora of humanity re-established contact. He rejoiced that such a time was now at hand. His soul leapt to see the orphan ships returning to the heart of the Imperium. Everything was ready and waiting. Everything had been preserved. The orphans would be embraced to his bosom, and then the great scheme of rebuilding would begin, and the Imperium of mankind would stretch itself out again across the stars, as was its birthright. As soon as they showed him proper fealty, as Emperor of mankind. The commander, quite entertained by all accounts, sent Hastur Sejanus to meet with the Emperor and deliver greeting. Sejanus was the commander's favourite. Not as proud or irascible as Abaddon, nor as ruthless as Sedire, nor even as solid and venerable as Yactan Cruz, Sejanus was the perfect captain, tempered evenly in all respects. A warrior and a diplomat in equal measure, Sejanus's martial record, second only to Abaddon's, was easily forgotten when in company with the man himself. A beautiful man, Loken would say, building his tale. A beautiful man, adored by all. No finer figure in Mark IV plate than Hastur Sejanus. That he is remembered, and his deeds celebrated, even here, amongst us, speaks of Sejanus's qualities. The noblest hero of the Great Crusade. That was how Loken would describe him to the eager listeners. In future times he will be recalled with such fondness that men will name their sons after him. Sejanus, with a squad of his finest warriors from the 4th Company, travelled in system in a gilded barge, and was received for audience by the Emperor at his palace on the third planet. And killed. Murdered. Hacked down on the onyx floor of the palace, even as he stood before the Emperor's golden throne. Sejanus and his glory squad, Deimos, Malsandar, Gorthoi and the rest, all slaughtered by the Emperor's elite guard, the so-called Invisibles. Apparently, Sejanus had not offered the correct fealty. Indelicately, he had suggested there might actually be another Emperor. The commander's grief was absolute. He had loved Sejanus like a son. They had warred side by side to effect compliance on 100 worlds. But the commander, always sanguine and wise in such matters, told his signalmen to offer the Emperor another chance. The commander detested resorting to war, and always sought alternative paths away from violence, where such were workable. This was a mistake, he reasoned, a terrible, terrible mistake. Peace could be salvaged. This Emperor could be made to understand. It was about then, Loken liked to add, that a suggestion of quote marks began to appear around the Emperor's name. It was determined that a second embassy would be dispatched. Malagurst volunteered at once. The commander agreed, but ordered the spear-tip forwards into assault range. The intent was clear. One hand extended open, in peace, the other held ready as a fist. If the second embassy failed, or was similarly met with violence, then the fist would already be in position to strike. That somber day, Loken said, the honour of the spear-tip had fallen, by the customary drawing of lots, to the strengths of Abaddon, Torgadon, little Horus Aximand, and Loken himself. At the order, battle musters began. The ships of the spear-tip slipped forward, running under obscurement. On board, stormbirds were hauled onto their launch carriages. Weapons were issued and certified. Oaths of moment were sworn and witnessed. Armour was machined into place around the anointed bodies of the chosen. In silence, tensed and ready to be unleashed, the spear-tip watched as the shuttle convoy bearing Malagurst and his envoys arced down towards the third planet. Surface batteries smashed them out of the heavens. As the burning scads of debris from Malagurst's flotilla billowed away into the atmosphere, the Emperor's fleet elements rose up out of the oceans, out of the high cloud, out of the gravity wells of nearby moons, 600 warships revealed and armed for war. Abaddon broke obscurement and made a final personal plea to the Emperor, beseeching him to see sense. The warships began to fire on Abaddon's spear-tip.
"My commander,"
Abaddon relayed to the heart of the waiting fleet, "there is no dealing here. This fool impostor will not listen." And the commander replied, "Illuminate him, my son, but spare all you can. That order notwithstanding, avenge the blood of my noble Sejanus. Decimate this Emperor's elite murderers, and bring the impostor to me." "And so," Loken would sigh, "we made war upon our brethren, so lost in ignorance." It was late evening, but the sky was saturated with light. The phototropic towers of the high city, built to turn and follow the sun with their windows during the day, shifted uneasily at the pulsating radiance in the heavens. Spectral shapes swam high in the upper atmosphere, ships engaging in a swirling mass, charting brief, nonsensical zodiacs with the beams of their battery weapons. At ground level, around the wide basalt platforms that formed the skirts of the palace, gunfire streamed through the air like horizontal rain, hosing coils of tracer fire that dipped and slithered heavily like snakes, die-straight zips of energy that vanished as fast as they appeared, and flurries of bolt shells like blizzarding hail. Down stormbirds, many of them crippled and burning, littered 20 square kilometers of the landscape. Black, humanoid figures paced slowly in across the limits of the palace sprawl. They were shaped like armored men, and they trudged like men. But they were giants, each 140 meters tall. The Mechanicum had deployed a half dozen of its Titan war engines. Around the Titan's soot-black ankles, troops flooded forward in a breaking wave 3 kilometers wide. The lunar wolves surged like the surf of the wave, thousands of gleaming white figures bobbing and running forward across the skirt platforms, detonations bursting amongst them, lifting rippling fireballs and trees of dark brown smoke. Each blast jutted the ground with a gritty thump and showered down dirt as an aftercurse. Assault craft swept in over their heads, low, between the shambling frames of the wide-spaced Titans, fanning the slowly lifting smoke clouds into sudden, energetic vortices. Every Astartes helmet was filled with vox chatter, snapping voices, chopping back and forth, their tonal edges roughened by the transmission quality. It was Loken's first taste of mass war since Ullinor. 10th Company's first taste, too. There had been skirmishes and scraps, but nothing testing. Loken was glad to see that his cohort hadn't grown rusty. The unapologetic regimen of live drills and punishing exercises he'd maintained had kept them whetted as sharp and serious as the terms of the oaths of moment they had taken just hours before. Ullinor had been glorious. A hard, unstinting slog to dislodge and overthrow a bestial empire. The Greenskin had been a pernicious and resilient foe, but they had broken his back and kicked over the embers of his revel fires. The commander had won the field through the employment of his favourite, practiced strategy. The spear tip thrust a tear out the throat. Ignoring the Greenskin masses, which had outnumbered the Crusaders 5-1, the commander had struck directly at the Overlord and his command coterie, leaving the enemy headless and without direction. The same philosophy operated here. Tear out the throat and let the body spasm and die. Loken and his men, and the war engines that supported them, were the edge of the blade unsheathed for that purpose. But this was not like Ullinor at all. No thickets of mud and clay-built ramparts. No ramshackle fortresses of bare metal and wire. No black powder airbursts or howling ogre foes. This was not a barbaric brawl determined by blades and upper body strength. This was modern warfare in a civilized place. This was man against man, inside the monolithic precincts of a cultured people. The enemy possessed ordnance and firearms every bit the technological match of the Legion forces, and the skill and training to use them. Through the green imaging of his visor, Loken saw armored men with energy weapons ranged against them in the lower courses of the palace. He saw tracked weapon carriages, automated artillery, nests of 4 or even 8 automatic cannons shackled together on cart platforms that lumbered forward on hydraulic legs. Not like Ullinor at all. That had been an ordeal. This would be a test. Equal against equal. Like against like. Except that for all its martial technologies, the enemy lacked one essential quality. And that quality was locked within each and every case of Mark IV power armor, the genetically enhanced flesh and blood of the Imperial Astartes. Modified, refined, post-human, the Astartes were superior to anything they had met or would ever meet. No fighting force in the galaxy could ever hope to match the Legions, unless the stars went out, and madness ruled, and lawful sense turned upside down. For, as Sidere had once said, the only thing that can beat an Astartes is another Astartes. And they had all laughed at that. The impossible was nothing to be scared of. The enemy, their armor a polished magenta trimmed in silver, as Loken later discovered when he viewed them with his helmet off, firmly held the induction gates into the inner palace. They were big men, tall, thick through the chest and shoulders, and at the peak of fitness. Not one of them, not even the tallest, came up to the chin of one of the lunar wolves. It was like fighting children. Well-armed children, it had to be said. Through the billowing smoke and the jarring detonations, Loken led the veteran first squad up the steps at a run, the plasteel soles of their boots grating on the stone. First Squad, 10th Company, Hellebore Tactical Squad, gleaming giants in pearl-white armor, the wolf head insignia stark black on their auto-responsive shoulder plates. Crossfire zigzagged around them from the defended gates ahead. The night air shimmered with the heat distortion of weapons discharge. Some kind of upright automated mortar was casting a sluggish, flaccid stream of fat munition charges over their heads.
"Kill it!"
Loken heard Brother Sergeant Jubal instruct over the link. Jubal's order was given in the curt argo of Chthonia, their derivation world, a language that the Lunar Wolves had preserved as their battle tongue. The Battle Brother carrying the squad's plasma cannon obeyed without hesitation. For a dazzling half-second, a 20-meter ribbon of light linked the muzzle of his weapon to the auto-mortar, and then the device engulfed the facade of the palace in a roasting wash of yellow flame. Dozens of enemy soldiers were cast down by the blast. Several were thrown up into the air, landing crumpled and boneless on the flight of steps.
"Into them!" Jubal barked.
Wildfire chipped and pattered off their armor. Loken felt the distant sting of it. Brother Callens stumbled and fell, but righted himself again, almost at once. Loken saw the enemy scatter away from their charge. He swung his bolter up. His weapon had a gash in the metal of the foregrip, the legacy of a greenskin's axe during Eleanor, a cosmetic mark Loken had told the armorers not to finish out. He began to fire, not on burst, but on single shot, feeling the weapon buck and kick against his palms. Bolter rounds were explosive penetrators. The men he hit popped like blisters, or shredded like bursting fruit. Pink mist fumed off every ruptured figure as it fell.
10th Company! Loken shouted. For the War Master!
The war cry was still unfamiliar, just another aspect of the newness. It was the first time Loken had declaimed it in war, the first chance he'd had since the honor had been bestowed by the Emperor after Illinar. By the Emperor. The true Emperor.
Lupercal! Lupercal!
The wolves yelled back as they streamed in, choosing to answer with the old cry, the Legion's pet name for their beloved commander. The war horns of the Titans boomed. They stormed the palace. Loken paused by one of the induction gates, urging his frontrunners in, carefully reviewing the advance of his company main force. Hellish fire continued to rake them from the upper balconies and towers. In the far distance, a brilliant dome of light suddenly lifted into the sky, astonishingly bright and vivid. Loken's visor automatically dimmed. The ground trembled, and a noise like a thunderclap reached him. A capital ship of some size, stricken and ablaze, had fallen out of the sky and impacted in the outskirts of the high city. Drawn by the flash, the phototropic towers above him fidgeted and rotated. Reports flooded in. Axemen's force, 5th Company, had secured the Regency and the pavilions on the ornamental lakes to the west of the high city. Torgadon's men were driving up through the lower town, slaying the armor sent to block them. Loken looked east. 3 kilometers away, across the flat plain of the bustled platforms, across the tide of charging men and striding titans and stitching fire, Abaddon's company, 1st Company, was crossing the bulwarks into the far flanks of the palace. Loken magnified his view, resolving hundreds of white-armored figures pouring through the smoke and chop-fire. At the front of them, the dark figures of 1st Company's foremost Terminator squad, the Justerin. They wore polished black armor, dark as night, as if they belonged to some other black legion.
"Loken to 1st," he said. 10th has entry."
There was a pause, a brief distort. Then Abaddon's voice answered,
"Loken, Loken, are you trying to shame me with your diligence?"
"Not for a moment, 1st Captain," Loken replied. There was a strict hierarchy of respect within the Legion, and though he was a senior officer, Loken regarded the peerless 1st Captain with awe. All of the Mournival, in fact, though Torgadon had always favored Loken with genuine shows of friendship. Now Sejanus was gone, Loken thought. The aspect of the Mournival would soon change.
"I'm playing with you, Loken,"
Abaddon sent, his voice so deep that some vowel sounds were blurred by the vox. I'll meet you at the feet of this false emperor. First one there gets to illuminate him. Loken fought back a smile. Ezekiel Abaddon had seldom sported with him before. He felt blessed, elevated. To be a chosen man was enough, but to be in with the favored elite, that was every captain's dream. Reloading, Loken entered the palace through the induction gate, stepping over the tangled corpses of the enemy dead. The plaster facings of the inner walls had been cracked and blown down, and loose crumbs like dry sand crunched under his feet. The air was full of smoke, and his visor display kept jumping from one register to another as it attempted to compensate and get a clean reading. He moved down the inner hall, hearing the echo of gunfire from deeper in the palace compound. The body of a brother lay slumped in a doorway to his left, the large, white-armored corpse odd and out of place amongst the smaller enemy bodies. Marjex, one of the Legion's apothecaries, was bending over him. He glanced up as Loken approached and shook his head. "Who is it?" Loken asked. "Tybor, of 2nd Squad," Marjex replied. Loken frowned as he saw the devastating head wound that had stopped Tybor. "The Emperor knows his name," Loken said. Marjex nodded and reached into his Narthesium to get the reductor tool. He was about to remove Tybor's precious gene seed so that it might be returned to the Legion banks. Loken left the apothecary to his work and pushed on down the hall. In a wide colonnade ahead, the towering walls were decorated with frescoes, showing familiar scenes of a haloed emperor upon a golden throne. How blind these people are, Loken thought. How sad this is. One day, one single day with the iterators, and they would understand. We are not the enemy. We are the same. And we bring with us a glorious message of redemption. Old night is done. Man walks the stars again, and the might of the Astartes walks at his side to keep him safe. In a broad, sloping tunnel of etched silver, Loken caught up with elements of 3rd Squad. Of all the units in his company, 3rd Squad, Locasta Tactical Squad, was his favorite, and his favored. Its commander, Brother Sergeant Nero Vipus, was his oldest and truest friend.
"How's your humor, Captain?" Vipus asked.
His pearl-white plate was smudged with soot and streaked with blood.
"Phlegmatic, Nero.
You?"
"Choleric. Red-raged, in fact. I've just lost a man, and two more of mine are injured. There's something covering the junction ahead, something heavy. Rate of fire like you wouldn't believe."
"Tried fragging it?"
"Two or three grenades, no effect. And there's nothing to see. Garvey, we've all heard about these so-called invisibles. The ones that butchered Sejanus. I was wondering..."
"Leave the wondering to me," Loken said.
"Who's down?"
Vipers shrugged. He was a little taller than Loken, and his shrug made the heavy ribbing and plates of his armor clunk together.
"Zacchaeus."
"Zacchaeus? No.
Torn into shreds before my very eyes. Oh, I feel the hand of the ship on me, Garvey."
The hand of the ship. An old saying. The commander's flagship was called the Vengeful Spirit, and in times of duress or loss, the wolves liked to draw upon all that implied as a charm, a totem of retribution.
"In Zacchaeus's name," Vipers growled, "I'll find this bastard invisible and..."
"Soothe your collar, brother. I've no use for it," Loken said. "See to your wounded while I take a look." Vipers nodded and redirected his men. Loken pushed up past them to the disputed junction. It was a vault-roofed crossways where four hallways met. The area read cold and still to his imaging. Fading smoke wisped up into the rafters. The ouslite floor had been chewed and peppered with thousands of impact craters. Brother Zacchaeus, his body as yet unretrieved, lay in pieces at the center of the crossway, a steaming pile of shattered white plasteel and bloody meat. Vipers had been right. There was no sign of an enemy present. No heat trace. Not even a flicker of movement. But studying the area, Loken saw a heap of empty shell cases, glittering brass, that had spilled out from behind a bulkhead across from him. Was that where the killer was hiding? Loken bent down and picked up a chunk of fallen plasterwork. He lobbed it into the open. There was a click, and then a hammering deluge of auto fire raked across the junction. It lasted 5 seconds, and in that time over 1,000 rounds were expended. Loken saw the fuming shell cases spitting out from behind the bulkhead as they were ejected. The firing stopped. Physoline vapor fogged the junction. The gunfire had scored a mottled gouge across the stone floor, pummeling Zacharias's corpse in the process. Spots of blood and scraps of tissue had been spattered out. Loken waited. He heard a whine and the metallic clunk of an autoloader system. He read weapon heat, fading, but no body warmth.
"Won a medal yet?" Vipers asked, approaching.
"It's just an automatic sentry gun," Loken replied.
"Well, that's a small relief at least," Vipers said. "After the grenades we've pitched in that direction, I was beginning to wonder if these vaunted invisibles might be invulnerables, too. I'll call up Devastator Support to—"
"Just give me a light flare," Loken said.
Vipers stripped one off his leg plate and handed it to his captain. Loken ignited it with a twist of his hand and threw it down the hallway opposite. It bounced, fizzling, glaring white-hot, past the hidden killer. There was a grind of servos. The implacable gunfire began to roar down the corridor at the flare, kicking it and bouncing it, ripping into the floor.
"Garvey!" Vipers began.
Loken was running. He crossed the junction, thumped his back against the bulkhead. The gun was still blazing. He wheeled round the bulkhead and saw the sentry gun, built into an alcove. A squat machine, set on 4 pad feet and heavily plated. It had turned its short, fat, pumping cannons away from him to fire on the distant, flickering flare. Loken reached over and tore out a handful of its servo flexes. The guns stuttered and died.
"We're clear!"
Loken called out. Locasta moved up.
"That's generally called showing off," Vipers remarked.
Loken led Locasta up the corridor, and they entered a fine state apartment. Other apartment chambers, similarly regal, beckoned beyond. It was oddly still and quiet.
"Which way now?" Vipers asked.
"We go find this Emperor," Loken said.
Vipers snorted.
"Just like that?"
"The first captain bet me I couldn't reach him first."
"The first captain, eh? Since when was Garville Loken on pally terms with him?" "Since 10th breached the palace ahead of 1st. "Don't worry, Nero. I'll remember you little people when I'm famous."
Nero Vipers laughed, the sound snuffling out of his helmet mask like the cough of a consumptive bull. What happened next didn't make either of them laugh at all.